The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And first up today, we'll be having a couple of the actors from Red Mask Players in Danville. They're putting on a comedy that they first presented back in 1962. It's called The Girls in 509 by Howard Teichman. And we'll hear it's a political comedy. We'll hear more about that and a scene from there as well. And then we'll be having, also live in the studio, the father and son duo of Tom and Matt Torino, who've been playing together since Matt started playing fiddle at the tender age of 7, as it says in their biographical material. They specialize in old-time string music, and they're going to be playing at the Iron Post in Urbana Sunday evening. So we'll have a live preview coming up on today's Live and Local. Wonderful sound of the Celtic harp with brass strings makes for a special sound. As performed by Patrick Ball, it was a tune of his called Against the Wind from his disc called The Wood of, I heard him pronounce this, and I'm not sure how he said it now, Morois maybe, but that is one of numerous CDs that Patrick has. He's been on this show a couple of times when he happens to have been in our area performing. He's a wonderful storyteller as well. And it is a story that Red Mask players will be telling, as all players do, when they put on plays, as they're doing starting this weekend. It's called The Girls in 509, a comedy by Howard Teichman. Runs the 20th through the 22nd, the 27th through the 29th, and February 3rd and 4th at the Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville. And on our show today with us are two of the actors from the production. Leslie Boedeker plays the character of Mimsy, and James Potts is McKittridge, the lawyer. Which, of course, if you don't know the girls in 509, as I do not, those characters' names are meaningless. So we'll have to get you guys to tell us something about the girls in 509. First, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
I understand this play was first presented a long, long time ago by this company.
That is correct. We purchased the theater that we're currently in, which is a converted church, back in 1962, and this was the first play that was ever put on in our new space.
And is this the first time it's been done since then? Or
it is the first time it's been done since then.
Wow. So that, what is that, 40? Actually, I can tell how long that is because I was born the year before.
Ah.
So, yeah, we won't make the point too graphic. But any idea why the director chose, or the producers or whoever chose this particular play so long after?
Well, we are very fortunate to be celebrating our 75th anniversary. Red Mask Players has been around for 75 years.
So this season is the 75th.
Correct. Yeah. This is our 75th season. So when the board of directors was looking to choose material for this season, they decided to take one play from the first 25 years, one play from the second 25 years, and one play from the third 25 years of our existence. And so that was why this was chosen, because it was in one of those demographics.
But, of course, there's a lot of other plays in those 25 years.
There are a lot of other plays. One of the things that did make this very unique to our specific situation is our director, Debbie Prentice. Debbie Prentice, her current husband, his parents met, fell in love, and got married in Red Mask. And his mother played the part of Miss Freud in that production back in 1962. Debbie, unfortunately, never had the opportunity to meet her mother-in-law, but she is doing this as kind of a tribute to her memory.
Plus the fact that it was the first play in the theater made
Correct.
It significant. So I actually looked this up, and I don't know if Howard Teichman has a lot of other plays or not. Do you know?
I don't believe he has terribly many other plays, but I'm really not very familiar with him as an author.
Yeah, I Wikipedia failed me today.
Oh, no!
Both regarding the play and the author. However, I did read a little bit of the preface, which is probably in your script right mm-hmm. there, in which he made a point of saying that this political comedy is for Democrats or Republicans or anybody who has any political interest or wants to laugh at political people. I'm now paraphrasing, maybe even introducing some of my own concepts at that point. But what is the play about?
Well, back in 1932, myself, the character of Mimsy, and my Aunt Hetty were at Herbert Hoover's un-election, I guess is what you could call it. And because of him not becoming elected as the President of the United States, we go to a hotel, we lock ourselves in a hotel room and refuse to come out until the Republican Party has a president back in the White House. Well, we don't read the newspaper. We don't know what a television is. We've had no outside news whatsoever for 26 years. And through a series of hysterical events, a gentleman does manage to get himself into our apartment. And we find out that, yes, indeed, they do now have a Republican president. And we then work our way out of the hotel room and into society again through meeting some politicians, through meeting some lawyers, and through a lot of wonderful physical comedy.
And I did read somewhere that these women are out somehow literally to trap a man somewhere along the line.
Yes. Unfortunately, my character, the script is never specific. All they say is that I was very, very young when we moved into this hotel room. So possibly somewhere in my teens, and basically have never seen another living soul except for my Aunt Hetty in 26 years. So here's this poor kid who still has the ideas of romance and love from a teenager's point of view and really, really wants to meet a man, really wants to have a relationship, but has no opportunity since people are not allowed into our hotel room.
And of course, you're just a few years older than you were when you developed these notions.
Exactly.
And have this presumably extreme political outlook, and I imagine that comes to play here at some point.
It does. It definitely comes to play. I'm not so sure my character has a lot of political notions other than the ones that were fostered on me by my adult aunt, who has raised me since I was a small child.
So, James, you're quite silent through all of this. How does your role of McKittridge the lawyer figure in here?
I inherited the case from my father, who was Miss Vanderwick's lawyer. And my character is somewhat of a dim-witted lawyer. Nobody really knows how he was able to graduate from Harvard Law School or pass the bar. But through all of this, my family and myself have kind of taken away what they worked so hard to build up, in terms of finances and such. So I am not very well liked, so to speak.
So the stereotypical lawyer, in other words.
Pretty much, yes. Yes.
Although I hasten to add that I know and like quite a number of lawyers, so I just in case any of those folks happen to be listening, this is the stereotypical thing. Well, I know you brought along a scene from the play, and it looks from your marker that it comes from near the end.
Yes.
And how about setting this up for us just a little bit, some of what's come before?
What has basically happened before is we have gotten a reporter into our room, one that I find very attractive. And we have also met the chairman of the Republican Party and the chairman of the Democratic Party, and they have both left. And we have found out that we had believed falsely that we had no money left, that all the money that we had brought with us, we had spent on the hotel room, we had spent on the food that had been brought to us for the everything that has been brought to us over 26 years, and we were completely broke. But then we found out that some of our my deceased father's hobbies, such as nylon, air conditioners, and cellophane, which we own the patents to, have been quite successful and we're really not broke anymore. So our lawyer, Mr. McKittridge, has been very gracious to not make us come down to Wall Street to discuss our finances, but is perfectly happy to come to our apartment and discuss our finances with us. So this is shortly after he arrives in our hotel room, and he's going to be his charming usual self.
Leslie Bodeker in the role of Mimsy, one of the girls in 509, and James Potts as McKittridge, the lawyer, from Red Mask Players' production of that play, opening this weekend in Danville.
Miss Vanderwick, I don't want you to fret about a thing. You're in good hands again.
It's nice to hear that, sir.
As you say, I'll take care of everything early next week. I'll send one of our junior partners up here, and you can explain matters to him.
But they're going to turn our water off today. In 2 hours, they're going to turn it off.
Now, I don't want you to worry about a thing. I've already solved your little problem. Undoubtedly, your landlord will be susceptible to certain kinds of pressure. Notice how we lawyers think.
Not yet, I haven't.
But you will. You will. You will. As I was stepping into the elevator downstairs just now, I saw a gentleman to whom our firm has made contributions year after year. And Francis X. Nella won't be the man to refuse us a favor.
You gave money to the Democratic Party?
We give money to both parties. It's what we in the law call playing it safe. But enough. Anything that our firm can do for you to make you happy and comfortable, we'll move heaven and earth to do it.
Oh, those are welcome words, Mr. McKittridge. And if you don't mind, we're going to take advantage of them right now. We have these bills.
Bills? You mean currency? Cash?
No, I mean bills as in rent. We've done nothing about it for 8 months.
8 months? Naughty, naughty, naughty. Why not, Miss Vanderwick?
No, no, no money, Mr. McKittridge.
Oh. Well, what happened to it?
That's what you're going to tell us. That's why you're here.
Well, I didn't come here for that exact reason. I was under the impression that you and your niece still had...
What?
Well, our records show that certain securities and the world-famous Vanderwick collection of diamonds and a rather substantial amount of cash are still in your possession, and I thought if I could be of any further service
all
to you...
All of that is gone.
Gone? What does she mean, gone?
As in going, going? But that inheritance from my brother Rensselaer, that didn't go under during the Depression, did it?
Not at all.
Would it be all right if you told us about it? Yes. Would you like to sit down, Mr. McKittridge?
Thank you.
Professor Pusey, you can sit here. Oh, Aunt Hetty, Adam is doing very well right where he is. As you say, dear. Now then, Mr. McKittridge, we're ready.
For what?
A financial report on our holdings.
A financial report? Certainly. What would you like to hear?
What about air conditioners? The patent on air conditioning, how is it making out?
The basic elements of refrigeration employed by every manufacturer are still controlled by that patent.
And nylons? How's business with nylon?
Why, it's the biggest thing of its kind on the world market today.
Oh, and Mimsy and I own it.
Not anymore, you don't. Now, now, now. No need to frown, Miss Vanderwick. You didn't lose the patents. We sold them.
You sold them? Who gave you permission? And for how much? Oh,
well, it's difficult to give a precise figure at this date, but roughly $170
million. $170 million? That seems a satisfactory figure. Not too high, not too low. When did you make the sale?
Well, after you'd been gone for 10 years, the courts had to rule on whether you were alive or dead. They decided you were dead.
How typical of the law. Jumping to conclusions.
2 days later, we arranged for your memorial service at St. Paul's.
Oh, that was nice. Who was there?
No one.
Oh.
However, you weren't entirely forgotten. The day your will was put into probate, 2,200 relatives stormed the courthouse.
Such effrontery. Mimsy and I have no relatives.
Well, there were lawsuits attempting to prove otherwise.
Don't tell me you allowed those imposters to get away with anything.
My dear Miss Vanderwick, 3.5 years of pre-law at Harvard, 4 years of the Harvard Law School, 2.5 years of graduate study in wills, trusts, and patents. Why, I have devoted my entire life to protecting the money which forms the bulk of your estate.
May heaven bless you, Mr. McKittridge. You and your dear father. I can't express my gratitude for such loyalty and devotion.
Oh. Thank you for those kind words, Miss Vanderwick. I feel rewarded already for the entire struggle. And I know Daddy will when I write him of our meeting. You know, Daddy became ill after the 5th year of litigation. That's when we bought the island.
An island? You bought an island?
We bought it for you.
If we were dead, why did we need an island?
To save you money rather than charge you the usual fee for sending our people on holidays. You see, our family worked so hard to keep the estate from your family that there was scarcely a moment when one of us wasn't completely exhausted. So we realized it would be cheaper for you if we bought a small island near Nassau and had you put up a shack.
How big a shack? How many rooms?
Daddy's, Uncle Henry's, or mine. Oh, but let's not linger over details. You should know that for a period of 18 months, one of the lower courts ruled in favor of giving the entire estate to your alleged relatives. But we fought them tooth and nail. We beat them, but oh, the money it cost you.
How much?
Well, there were the claimants and their attorneys, and witnesses and their attorneys, and quite often there were attorneys for the attorneys.
Well, at least we do have the $170 million.
Oh, I wish we did. You see, there were taxes to be paid during all of those years.
How much were they?
$100 million.
$100 million in taxes? I would have let them lock me up before I paid it.
Apparently you don't mind being locked up, but Daddy and I do. We paid.
Then give us what's left.
Well, I'm sorry to say, there were other expenses, too.
Such as?
Legal fees. You see, once we got hold of this case, we practically gave up every other client we represented.
What's left after legal fees?
I'm coming to that. But you must understand, there were court costs, executor's fees, and records of proceedings.
I understand, but how much have we got?
I'm coming to that, too. Then there were certified vouchers for identification of witnesses.
Anything else?
Yes. Transportation and travel.
How much is left?
And then there were fountain pens, pencils, pen wipers.
Mr. McKittridge.
Rubber bands, ink, paper clips. Oh, it's amazing how these things add up.
I am prepared to be amazed. As of this morning, how much have we got in the bank?
I'm glad you asked that question. $3,121.
$3,000? And a beautiful island.
Unfortunately, we had to sell the island a few years ago. You were short of funds.
And you and Daddy and the rest of the family were not?
Hardly. We bought it. No need to frown.
Yes, we do have some currency and enough to get us through our current problems. But I wouldn't be so certain of that. May we have a check for $3,000, Mr. McKittridge?
I don't know quite how to say this.
Try. Let one little word lead to another.
Your legal bill for this fiscal year, Miss Van de Wyck, it hasn't been paid.
I'm not going to ask how much. You'll tell me soon enough.
Yes. It's $25,000. And that minus $3,121 means that all you owe us is $21,779.
We owe you? Mimsy, fix the phone. Call Chicago. I'm going to get Clarence Durrow.
And I gather, Leslie, you were obviously reading two roles there.
Yes, I was.
Mimsy and her aunt, Van de Wyck, two of the girls in 509. The Girls in 509 is the name of the play by Howard Teichman, being presented by Met Red Mask Players in Danville at the Katherine Randolph Theater. This weekend, the 20th through the 22nd, next weekend, the 27th through the 29th, and the following weekend, February 3rd and 4th, with James Potts as McKittridge the lawyer and a number of other actors representing various characters, of course. Friday and Saturday performances start at 8 o'clock. The Sunday performance starts at 2. And for reservations, you can go to their website for complete information, which is redmaskplayers.com. You can email redmaskplayers@hotmail.com or phone 217-442-5858. Thank you both very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program is made possible with support from the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, presenting Classics 2, Dances and Romances, featuring Stefan Milenkovic on violin, Saturday, January 28th at 7:30 p.m. in the Follinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Stay tuned for a live performance in our studio by Tom and Matt Torino, who will be at the Iron Post in Urbana Sunday night. It's Live and Local. Thank you. Heard a couple of highlights from the 2009 Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, beginning with a pair of tunes, Morning Nightcap and Waiting on a Fence by the Mean Lids, and Barlow Knife by the Ruthless Goats. And as it happens, we have one of the members of Mean Lids here in the studio with us, Matt Torino. He is joined by his father, Tom, and they are going to be at the Iron Post in Urbana on Sunday night at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
And thank you all being available to make yourselves available to come in today. It's been a while since we've had you together, although we've had you with other groups in the recent past.
That's true. Well, it's great to be here, Kevin, and it's quite appropriate that we should be on your show because we're still alive, and we're still local.
I'm glad to know you're still alive. Although you are approaching retirement.
I am. Approaching it very quickly, a couple of months. And then, retirement from teaching at the university, but hope to do a lot more playing. That's my plan.
So you will be more live in the terms of live and local. You will be even more live than you were before.
Yep, I hope so.
And as one of the last times you and I talked, I think I remember you said that you wanted to spend more time focusing on just seven of your instruments.
Yeah, six or seven.
Six or seven, yeah, which are?
Banjo, fiddle, guitar, accordion, but there's actually two kinds of accordions.
You're counting those twice?
Yeah, because you have to practice them differently, so that's six.
That's five.
Imbira, which is from Zimbabwe, caña, which is it's a flute from Peru, and charango, which is
a
stringed instrument from Peru.
That's eight, counting the two accordions.
Yeah, not counting. Well,
that's eight counting the two.
Let's call accordion one then, so we'll just say
seven. That's seven, fair enough. And Matt, how many have you been practicing?
I stick to the two generally. I play fiddle and guitar, and that keeps me more than busy enough. Maybe one of these days I'll work up to working on some other instrument, but these days I have just enough time to keep up with what I play as it is. So.
Well, when you retire.
When I retire, I'll maybe then work up to three.
Yeah. Well, you know, when he was little, he always wanted to, because he was watching me, he always wanted to learn all these different instruments, and I wouldn't let him. And the result of this is he can actually play his instrument, and I really can't play any of these instruments. I'm spread too thin. So
that's why you waited till retirement to actually finally practice them. Yes. So everybody you play with is thinking, thank God, maybe he'll learn how to play these things.
That's right.
For once.
That's right.
Well, why don't we just launch into something that you do play. So you've got the banjo in your hand there, Tom, and the fiddle in yours, Matt.
Yep. So what we'll be doing at the Iron Post on Sunday night is a bunch of different things. So we play as a duo. We play in a string band. We have a Cajun band, a full Cajun band now, called the Cornstalkers Cajun Band. But when we play as a duo, we get to do a pretty good variety of things because we know so many different things together. So we'll be probably ending the night with some Cajun music so people can dance. But we play a lot of the kind of music we're going to do right now, string band music, but original compositions. This first one is one of Matt's compositions called Jane's Birthday. It was for Jane McClintock's birthday. Jane, if you're listening, hello.
Birthday.
A dance tune.
A dance tune by Matt Torino, performed by Matt and Tom on fiddle and banjo, respectively. I have to keep track of who I say in what order. What is that inside your banjo?
Oh, you don't want to know about that. This is a pickup. It's an electronic pickup.
Song. Oh, I almost thought it was. It almost looked like a little animal or something stuffed in there.
No, it's an electric pickup, which we use. I use it pretty much all the time when I'm playing either in a club or a dance situation. Believe it or not, people think of banjos as really loud, but they get lost in a band, particularly with fiddles. So we've started using pickups or clip-on mics to get our sound pretty clear and strong.
So if you had a resonator, it would be a little louder?
Yeah, it would be louder. And but, you know, I play a style called frailing or clawhammer, and typically people who play in this style use open-back banjos but you and I will talk about that later.
We probably will. I think people on this show may well have heard me say, you know, maybe I'll learn the banjo someday. So somebody, a friend of mine, called me my bluff and bought me banjo for dummies for Christmas. I'll buy one.
Banjo is really the road to happiness, and so I'm glad you're finally embarking on this journey.
Well, speaking of roads to happiness, I had my first and second short and very brief experiences with hypnosis recently.
Huh.
And just watching you guys play made me wonder if one of the ways that this type of music works, you know, which is improvisatory to a point and is oral tradition significantly.
And cyclical, very repetitive.
Yeah, where you're, and you weren't really looking at each other except for one fraction of a second right when Matt decided, okay, I think we're going to end this thing now. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you go into a form of a trance of some kind in order, you go into this trance space where the music is.
Yeah, I would say very much so. Especially if you, I mean, depending on, like in that case, it doesn't happen quite as much as because we played it for maybe three or four times through. But you can definitely, if you're going to be playing the same tune for a really long time, and you can mess around with it to a certain degree, but there's definitely a kind of, like kind of other mindset that you kind of sink into that isn't very, ideally, if you can, the ideal in my opinion is when you can like stop thinking completely and let the music come out and just kind of flow out as you do it, basically, and it's totally non-mental process, basically. It's kind of like
it sounds
physical.
Like Zen.
Yeah, it for me. I mean, I think there's different ways of making music, and certainly on the in a studio from playing on the radio or even on stage a little bit more. I mean, you're conscious of people listening, so it's a different kind of feeling. But when a lot of the instruments I play, and particularly the Zimbabwean mbira, where I'll play one song, it's very repetitive. It's a tiny, short cycle, and I'll play it for a really long time, and I'll start singing with it. And I absolutely get to someplace else, and it's what attracts me to these kinds of musics. When we play dances, we can do it because the dancers are dancing, and all we have to do is keep the groove going.
You can do it.
We can get lost.
Ah.
Without...
In that trance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which the dancers are, too. So it's, I mean, there's a whole flow thing that happens with... This is the contra dancing thing that goes on here at the Phillips Center every other Friday night.
Yeah, there's one tonight, in fact, at the Phillips Center.
Yeah. So who's playing?
Big Blue Stem.
Oh, nice.
With Kathleen Everingham, Jose Agusti.
And the famous Randy Cordell.
Randy Cordell, Todd... I don't know. There's a bunch of them. Todd and...
And Drew.
Drew. And anyway, we can go on and on.
Well, Jose Agusti was in the Ruthless Goats we played.
Absolutely.
Just a little bit
true.
Ago. Yeah. While we were cool. Setting up for you guys.
Well, so that was an older composition of ours. Let's play a newer composition. This one is a tune that actually is dedicated to Randy and Jose, who are my guy guitar friends. We get together, or at least try to get together once a week and play guitar music together, or guitar and mando. And so this tune I made up, and then I first played it with them, and they just made it sound so good. And I named it Unconditional Love for our friendship.
Matt and Tom Torino here on Live and Local. They'll be at Iron Post Sunday night in Urbana. Thank you. May we all have such unconditional love. Tune by Tom Torino, played by Tom and Matt, here live on Live and Local. They'll be at the Iron Post in Urbana Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. We have support for Live and Local today from the Illinois Chamber Orchestra in their scintillating and sophisticated concert with violinist Karina Kanellakis in Vivaldi's Four Seasons with guest conductor Andrew Sewell on Friday, January 20th, which of course is tonight at St. Agnes Church in Springfield, and Saturday the 21st at Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. Details are available at ilsymphony.org. And coming up in a little bit, I'll mention some of the other events you can go see and hear live in our listening area. There's an awful lot of them now that schools are back in session and people are back from vacations, and so people are back into the go out and see music mode. I'm curious about a couple of some of the groups that are on your influences list, at least according to your MySpace page, because I like some of these names. Oh, you want the whole list? It's long. Who are the Horseflies?
That's a good one. That's actually a pretty big influence of ours. They are an old-time string band, kind of, out of Ithaca, New York. And the banjo player is a fellow who my dad, Tom, is pretty thoroughly influenced by and stylistically. And then for me, I can say that they have a banjo uke player, which kind of creates basically the very main defining factor of their sound, rhythmic sound, and that rhythmic sound that they have created is very, like, influential on how I play fiddle, just because it has this kind of constant, like, backbeat into chukka kind of feel to it, and so I've kind of incorporated that into the bowing that I tend to use for a lot of the music I play.
Yeah, but I hear that fairly often.
Yeah, so.
How about the Freight Hoppers?
They're an old-time band also.
Bryson City, North Carolina.
Yep. And
they chug, you know.
Oh, okay. That's that same rhythm you were
talking
about.
Yeah.
How about the Mamu? I'm picking the ones with the good names. The Mamu Playboys, if they said that right?
That's Steve Riley. That's a Cajun band.
No?
Yep, they're...
They're from Lafayette, Louisiana, and they've kind of been one of the... Michael Doucet is probably one of the more famous modern Cajun bands, so...
So if you want to do some exploring, folks, go to Matt and Tom's MySpace page, look up some of those folks on YouTube or whatever, and I might go do the same thing, because I hadn't heard of them, and you guys sound so good, so I figure people who you like probably sound pretty good. What do you got next?
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, why you want to do the pretty one?
Sure.
The pretty one. You do one pretty song.
Yeah.
Bold move. We don't want to do a singing one at all.
You want to do a singing one?
I don't know.
Sure.
It's up to you.
Sing then. You want to sing Paganel?
Sure.
Sort of short version of it.
Yeah. Otherwise,
but you just tuned that guitar.
I know.
Switching back to the banjo.
Drag?
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
That's
fine. Kinks in his plan.
Yeah.
This is an old song that I learned from a fellow named Bruce Molsky, who's an old-time fiddle player and also is an influence of sorts. But he does, this song is about the turn of the century and basically the mechanization of industries and the loss of jobs due to that. So it's about a shoemaker. The peg and the awl are the tools that a shoemaker uses. And so
that's what it's called.
That's what it's called.
So this is the turn to the 19th century.
Yes.
We have to clarify.
19th to 20th, that's right.
The 19th to the 20th, yeah.
Showing my age.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah, you're a geezer, Matt. So anyway, we hope to see you on Sunday night at the Iron Post. Please come out and do a little dancing and socializing.
Here it comes. In 1801, Paganel.
all I done. I'm gonna pay down my all my aching home. In 1802, pegging home. In 1802, pegging home. In 1802, pegging shoes is all I do. I'm gonna lay down my all my pegging home.
Sure, I've heard you sing before. I must have, but I'm not sure.
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what. You don't have to tell me anything, but now I just want.
Yeah, it's
you usually
rare,
don't let him. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
It's a rare occurrence.
No, that was, I like story songs.
Yeah,
I
mean, for
it's,
sure.
It's sort of a story song.
Yeah, so, you know, it kind of has
tell
a progression.
It. Yeah. Well, let me mention some other events going on, and you guys can discuss amongst yourselves what you want to end with. And we'll go out with that. This is Friday, so here are some things going on. In Peoria, the Feudin' Hillbillies are at Cruisin's 2 at 10 o'clock tonight. The Tilted Kilt, also in Peoria, Dan Hubbard is there this evening at 7 o'clock. At the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5 is Jazz with Condition Blue. And at Michael's Restaurant in Bloomington this evening at 6, the Aduki Trio play jazz. The Illinois Chamber Orchestra, we mentioned actually earlier in our underwriting announcement. The Greater Decatur Chorale are performing three times this weekend at the Decatur Civic Center this evening at 7:30 and tomorrow, 7:30, with the guest Enigma, a barbershop quartet, and then on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with the Holy Family School Choir. The Royal Philharmonic Orchestra with pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet are at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow night at 7:30, two different programs. Springfield Theater Center presents the musical Chess at the Hoagland Center for the Arts tonight and tomorrow at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Desafinado are at the Krannert Center in Urbana for the Afterglow Saturday night at 9:30. The Sugar Prophets are at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign Saturday night at 10. Illinois Wesleyan University is presenting a jazz festival at Westbrook Auditorium in Bloomington. Check their website for complete times. And on Sunday, the Blues Deacons are at Pop's Place in Decatur. That's at 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Lots of other things going on as well. check your local listings, as they say. We have support for our show today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features just-arrived Italian wines, followed by live music from 7 to 9 by Pamela Makala and Megan Johns. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. We are a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Thanks to Matt and Tom Torino for coming in. Go out and hear them on Sunday night at the Iron Post in Urbana, 7 o'clock.
Got time for one more. This is an old jug band tune called Wild About My Lovin'. Thank you.